a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. As promised, we're going to be talking with Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition in Massachusetts. Toby also with Cape Gunworks there in Hyannis, Massachusetts. But I guess that's his day job. So I assume that's where he is spending the majority of his time. I don't know when Toby's sleeping these days because he is doing a ton of work along with a lot of other grassroots volunteers with the Civil Rights Coalition trying to undo Chapter 135, right? That's the sweeping gun control bill, gun control package, I guess, in Massachusetts, impacting everything from, you know, the training that is required by the state before you can exercise your Second Amendment rights to the guns that are available for sale, to where guns can be carried. This touches everything, right? Self-defense, recreational shooting, hunting. There are just all kinds of infringements, not just impositions on a right to keep arms, but outright infringements on a right to keep and bear arms that are part of Chapter 135. The good news is that in addition to the lawsuits that are underway, Toby and tens of thousands of Massachusetts gun owners were successful in putting a repeal of Chapter 135 on the ballot in November of 2026. So between now and then, it is a matter of education. It is a matter of raising awareness, and not just among gun owners. As you will hear from Toby, they're doing a lot of work to engage people who are not gun owners, people who might not even be Second Amendment supporters, but who claim to be fans of good government and transparent government. They, too, should be incensed at how this gun law was put on the books. So a great conversation with Toby Leary, taking a look and a listen. Toby, thanks so much for joining me on the program, sir. It's good to see you again today.
It's always good to be seen and even better to be here with you, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And again, I mean, thank you for everything that you're doing there in Massachusetts with the Civil Rights Coalition to roll back these unconstitutional infringements on a right to keep and bear arms. I know we've got, you know, litigation that is ongoing and underway, but the effort to undo Chapter 135 of the ballot box is really, really important. I know that might be some folks out there saying, it's not possible. It's Massachusetts we're talking about here. Listen, the fact that you all were able to get so many signatures in such a short amount of time with the opposition that we saw from state officials, that tells me that we've got a real fighting chance here to make a difference with what you're doing and the Coalition for Civil Rights is doing there in Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Cam. That's true. I believe the same thing. We are we're definitely not going to quit. We're not going away. We're not going to sit down and watch our rights be eroded. And the effort that you talked about was just the start. That grassroots, we were able to mobilize about 100,000 people in 5 weeks without any paid signature gatherers or anything like that. I know that's kind of old history, but I still think it's worth noting because in this state, we don't have a huge amount of gun owners that are actively involved in everyday, you know, gun laws in Massachusetts. You know, they're busy people. They just go about their lives. They got kids to bring to practice and work to do and everything else. So it was really our job to kind of sound the alarm and bring attention to the matter that is coming down the road, and ultimately it passed. So now it's our job to enter phase two, which is to educate the public of what happened, because a lot of people don't know. They just read the snippet in the newspaper that, oh, this is all about ghost guns and this is all about red flag laws and that's about it. Well, no, this is 116 pages of unconstitutional legislation that is fundamentally changing our right to keep and bear arms. And if you think about it, even non-gun owners or not people who don't believe in the right to keep and bear arms have something about American values that they believe in at some point, whatever the issue is. And if the right that is enshrined in our Constitution is so fragile that it could be voted away by a state elected legislature and a signature by the governor, then nobody really has rights. We all have privileges that are hanging on by a thread of a majority vote in their state legislature and a vote and a signature by the governor. And that isn't the definition of a right. That's a privilege. That's a, you know, a entitlement given to us by man. And you and I both know that isn't how rights work. So really, I think our big job and our task is twofold. One, to educate people on exactly what happened, the process that happened. And two, show them with empirical evidence. We just launched a new website called Get the Facts 2026. Of all of these habitual violent offenders in the state of Massachusetts that get a slap on the wrist, get a pass, get the, you know, personal recognizance, get time served, get some sort of pass for their violent repeat behavior, oftentimes involving firearms, and yet they want to continue to create more laws for you and I, and for the most responsible, you know, lawful segment of society. And that's, I think, very eye-opening when you see people who have, you know, committed multiple felonies, they're violent, they're fentanyl dealers, they're whatever the case is, and yet they get away with it or get off easy or get time served or no jail time. What's the point of more laws? Well, we all know what the true point is. It's to erode our fundamental rights until it doesn't exist and the right to keep and bear arms goes away.
Absolutely. And, you know, so there's a lot to unpack there. But let me start with the fact, first of all, I love that you all are cognizant that, you know, the repeal efforts are going to fail unless you are able to get non-gun owners on board, right? I mean, gun owners just are not a majority in Massachusetts. If you were, the gun laws would look a lot different. The makeup of the legislature would look a lot different. So you've got to have arguments that resonate with folks who don't own guns, with folks who may be opposed to our right to keep and bear arms. And so the way that you're going about this, the track where you're, again, you're talking about, listen, you know, whether or not you like the Second Amendment, there are some rights that you enjoy, right? And the way that this law was put in place is so abusive of liberty that it should concern you whether or not you're a gun owner. I think that's fantastic. I think talking about the violent criminals who are getting a pass in Massachusetts. I mean, listen, we have a segment on the show every day called The Recidivist Report. And we do just that, right? We highlight these stories. Here are these people who aren't touched by the gun laws in Massachusetts or New York or Illinois. They get slaps on the wrist. They get plea deals. They go on to commit more offenses. So what is the point, right, of going after you and I and other lawful gun owners when the criminal justice system and, frankly, so many lawmakers are giving these violent predators a pass? Right. I think that is an argument that resonates with people, whether or not they're gun owners, because ultimately, just based on my experience, if you're not a gun owner, you're not a committed anti-gun activist, but you are maybe like a soft supporter of gun control. Right. That makes sense to me. Right. Well, why does something like a red flag law make sense? Why does something like a handgun roster make sense to someone who's not a gun owner? Because they're told that it will make them safer. Right. These laws are in place to improve public safety. And so if we can point out, listen, these laws are touching people who aren't committing violent crimes. But you know what happens to people who are committing violent crimes? Look, they're getting probation, right? They're getting released on low bond. They're going out and committing other offenses while they're out on the street. If we can remind folks, we're not the problem. Here's the problem. And lawmakers don't want to address that problem of their own creation. I think that that actually does resonate. I think that can have a huge impact, even in states like Massachusetts.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the implication of all these types of laws is that the 600,000 gun owners in Massachusetts are ticking time bombs. We are the could or at some point might, you know, the could and the might. We have the means and now we might break bad at some point. And the implication is that the people who have been, I can't think of another segment of society that is as has been checked out as much as the gun owner in Massachusetts, because we go through an extreme process to get the permission slip to go exercise our right. And then every time you purchase a gun, you go through it again federally on a NICS check. And then every 5 years, this repeats itself, you know. So the point is, meanwhile, there's violent criminals that, like, take, for instance, Barnstable County House of Correction. It's beautiful, brand new, state-of-the-art jail in our county. It's only probably 10, 15 years old, if that, all state-of-the-art. Big money to build it. it can hold about 550, excuse me, about 550 inmates. And the right now there's about 150 inmates in there, not for lack of violent criminals out there. It's just the lack of willpower to put them away. Plymouth County House of Correction, I was talking with Sheriff McDonald there, has 1,600 capacity. They're the last sheriff's department in the state of Massachusetts. You've heard a lot about this in national news, that will still work with ICE and honor detainers from ICE. They're the only one in the entire state. And I think there's 200 or 300 ICE detainees there and about another 100 or so inmates. Out of a 1,600 inmate capacity, we have about 450 odd people in that jail at any given time. They've closed the biggest prison systems in the state, and they're making them into housing and whatever else. There's no resolve whatsoever to lock away violent criminals. So if they, that would make us safer instantly, overnight, without the need to pass a single law. And that's the thing that people need to hear. Most people are blown away when I tell them that statistic, because they feel the violence that happens every day in Massachusetts. You know, Mayor Wu is about to go testify before Congress, and she's saying that Boston is one of the safest cities. Well, if you look statistically, Massachusetts is the most violent state in New England. And we have Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, which are all constitutional carry states to our north. And we have the most comprehensive gun control in the nation here in Massachusetts. And yet we're still the most violent state in the nation, in the New England. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say we're so safe because of our gun laws, and yet statistically, the evidence shows the opposite. And have three constitutional carry states to our north that are safer. You know, it
right.
doesn't make sense. So
absolutely, and you know, and again, I mean, it's not about, well, we got this, you know, jail that holds 1,600 people. Let's find 1,600 people to throw in jail, right? That's right. not it. But there are, as you say, there are individuals who are committing serious violent offenses. And, you know, it's not just Massachusetts. We saw this in Colorado last year, Toby. Democrats introducing all kinds of gun control bills. What was fascinating is there was so little punishment attached because the Democrats don't want to put anybody in prison. Right. So, you know, there's a massive fines, right, for violating like the semi-auto ban that did not become law last year. They were trying to run it again. They, you know, they were trying to punish people financially because I guess it's okay to bankrupt somebody, right? But we don't want to put them behind bars. And so, you know, you've got this it's this weird dichotomy, right, where they want to put more laws in place. But a lot of Democrats, again, they're very, very, you know, we don't want to actually police, right? And we certainly don't want to incarcerate. Which, you know, you can say, okay, that's good for me, I suppose. You don't want to put me in prison if you catch me with a, you know, 20 round magazine, I'm only allowed 10 rounds. But it's bad when you've got people who are racking up, you know, a laundry list of criminal charges like carjacking, home invasion, felon in possession of a firearm. And these people are violent felons. They're not talking about, you know, possessory offenses. And those individuals are being steered away from the prison system too, right? They don't want to put those individuals behind bars. That's where the issue comes into play, right? And so it's not that it's not just that they're blaming us for violent crimes that we're not committing, but they don't want to hold the people who are committing those crimes accountable. They don't want to ensure that there are consequences when you get caught committing a violent act like a carjacking or a home invasion.
Yeah, you're 100% right there. And I think there's the way I see it, it boils down to two different paradigms when it comes to the gun control world. And one is that they are incredibly incompetent and bad at their job because they have chosen the most inefficient method to try to make society safe by controlling the people you don't need to worry about and letting the criminal walk free. Or they are nefarious and they know full well what they're doing. They know that they are using the criminal acts to create this loop of outrage in the public that here is another gun-related crime, that if it wasn't for these people who cling to their guns and their God and their whatever, then we wouldn't have this problem. So they can use the emotion of the news cycle and the bad press and the tragic accident that happens to conjure up emotions in people to continue to erode our rights. And that they need that. That's why they don't want to fix that. They don't want to fix the problem because they need that raw emotion. They need that tragic story to continue the news cycle to create this environment that's ripe for continuing to erode our laws. And I think that's a much more dangerous situation than the person who's just ignorant and has believed a couple of talking points and might feel that, oh, if we could just do this, then we'll all be safer. Well, with a quick education lesson, those people can be brought around. But the other way, it's more of a nefarious intent to truly erode our rights away until we can be controlled by those, the powers that be. And that's ultimately, I think, the end game of all gun control is they have plans for us that we wouldn't go along with. And if that's the case, they need to disarm us.
Yeah. And, you know, we're getting ready to celebrate the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord. And, you know, the you guys have been like the modern day Paul Revere's warning that the redcoats are coming. Right. And the redcoats are there, unfortunately, in Massachusetts, passing 135. So now you've got basically a year and a half to educate the public on what this bill does, why it is so bad, why the way it became law was so awful, it needs to be refuted at the ballot box. What can gun owners outside of the state of Massachusetts do to help right now, Toby?
Yeah, well, one of the biggest ways they could help is to fund the effort. That's a big one. We're going to have to, it's going to cost a lot of money. We're not at all in the dark about what we think the next year and a half is going to look like. There's no question in our mind that, you know, the moms demand, the modern day red shirts, the Giffords, Everytown, Bloomberg, Soros money is going to flow into this state. And we've seen in other states that they've spent between $10 and $20 million to further the anti-gun agenda on state issues. And we're going to need to shovel against that tide. I think we have a really good plan in place to do that. We're going to do our own version of the state's listening tour, which the state house did prior to passage of this bill, where they went out into 11 different communities. And basically, it wasn't much of a listening tour. It was more of a
lecture tour, right?
Lecture tour and check the box that we did all the right things before we imposed this horrific legislation. So we're going to go out into the communities, the VFWs, the town committees, the, you know, any place of public convenience where people want to gather and listen. We'll have a body of panelists that can talk to the nuance of these laws, how they impact lawful people and potentially make law-abiding people felons overnight by the passage of this law for doing no evil act, committing no violence, just these malum prohibitum laws that are illegal because the government in their ivory tower says so. And there's no victim. They're all victimless crimes of, you know, this administration, basically. And we'd like to really show the difference between the true evil acts where they do nothing about versus the, you know, these acts of basic unconstitutional acts that the legislature has passed. And we'll open it up for questions and answers. You know, I believe that we can make some inroads. Obviously, we'll do this at gun shops and gun sportsmen's clubs as well. But I'm kind of taking for granted that we'll have the gun vote, if you will, on election day. However, there is going to need to be an effort to get those people out to the polls because tragically, I believe one study showed that about 21% of gun owners in Massachusetts actually vote in a non-national election. That's a horrific stat, you know, statistic. We should all be out there bringing friends, educating our families and, you know, bringing whoever we can to the polls. And I get it. We kind of get what we deserve if we don't vote, right? But that is the case. We need to get everybody out to the polls in 2026. Number two is, you know, obviously we're going to run this like any other campaign, whether it's a Senate campaign or a, you know, congressional campaign, and that costs a lot of money. So getting advertising and, yard signs and bumper stickers and shirts and everything else made, it's going to cost money. So we're planning on doing that. Radio, possibly TV. We'll see how that goes and how that all plays out. So that's kind of the next phase of education and whatnot that'll cost a lot of money. And how else people could get involved is to take this type of content, like from your show and your great articles on bearing arms and anything the Civil Rights Coalition puts out there, and share it out. And everybody knows someone from Massachusetts, send it to their friends and family. And hey, do you know what's going on? You'd be shocked. I make fundraising calls every week. You'd be shocked how many people who are actually like donors to political campaigns that still don't know what happened last July with this bill. They're like, well, I heard something about it. Why don't you tell me? Like, they don't know anything about what's going on. So, you know, we got to up the ante a little bit and try to educate and get people involved in a grassroots effort to say, hey, now is not the time to sit on the sidelines. I get it. We're all busy, but we got to get involved. We got to start to make inroads. And if we sit idly by, then we get what we deserve. And that's not something I'm willing to let happen to a state I love. And
absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, you guys are off to a great start. Getting this on the ballot in 2026 was a big achievement, but obviously we want more, right? And you just laid out a lot of great ways for folks both in and outside of the state to help. We're going to keep talking with you, Toby. You know, anytime you want to come back on, you got something new to talk about, you've got an open invitation. Anything we can do to help spread the word, we certainly will, because, you know, I was born in Massachusetts. I don't live there now, but even if I had no connection to Massachusetts, what is happening to you guys is so egregious, and it's not going to stay there, right? These bad ideas get exported to other states around the country. So even if you've never stepped foot in Massachusetts, this is your fight too. It is all of our fights if we care about the right to keep and bear arms. And Toby, again, thanks to everything you, the grassroots volunteers, are doing. Again, it is inspiring, and I think you got a lot of folks around the country who are there to help.
Thanks so much, Cam. I appreciate it. And if anyone wants to help, they can go to thecivilrightscoalition.com and sign up to help, get our newsletter, and stay up to date with everything going on, or donate right through that link as well.
Fantastic. Toby, thanks so much for your time today. We'll talk again very soon.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
I certainly do appreciate Toby joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here very soon. And yes, we will get to our own recidivist report here in just a moment or two. In fact, I guess we can go ahead and get started with that right now. Here's the headline. Suspect in Forest Acres shooting was out of jail on bond, also on probation from previous conviction. This Forest Acres, South Carolina, that we're talking about here. And yeah, somebody well known to police who was given multiple lucky breaks. This is not just a blue state phenomena. WIS in South Carolina reported recently on the arrest of Tyquan Kelly. He's 20 years old. Police say that he got into an argument with a woman who he was in a relationship with on Monday. She tried to leave the apartment complex where they were staying in a vehicle. Kelly allegedly fired shots at her. Woman fled the apartment complex, stopped near a elementary school. Kelly was apparently arrested while walking on the street near that elementary school. At the time of the arrest, he was on foot. No gun was found, but officers searched his vehicle, which was nearby, and they found the gun that they say he used to shoot at his girlfriend. WIS reports that Kelly is familiar to law enforcement. He's been arrested several times, including after a mass shooting in Columbia, South Carolina, in April of 2023. 9 of the 11 people who were injured during this after-prom party were hit by gunfire. No one was killed. Kelly, at the time, was 18 years old. He was spotted by deputies leaving the park, dumping a weapon. They tested that weapon and found that the casings did not match any of the casings that were involved in the shooting. So the charges that Kelly was facing then of possessing a firearm were ultimately dropped by the Fifth Circuit Solicitor's Office. But in 2024, just a few months ago, WIS reports that he ended up pleading guilty to a drug charge, two weapons charges, and an assault and battery charge, and I guess what was a separate incident. and was sentenced to 5 years in prison last year. But he never served any time because he was placed under the Youthful Offender Act into a diversionary program. So all 5 years of his sentence was suspended. He was put on probation and then was told basically, you know, keep your nose clean. But under the Youthful Offender Act, if you are charged with a crime while you're on probation, you are eligible to go back to jail. And in fact, the thinking is that you will go back to jail, right? I mean, that's sort of the assumption that is made. But in this case, at the time of this shooting on Monday, Kelly was both on probation and he was also out on bond. Tyquan Kelly had been arrested, a short time ago, after he was put on probation for the drug, gun, and assault and battery charges. He had been arrested, and a judge granted a bond on pending charges, including unlawful sale of a stolen gun, unlawful possession of a high-caliber gun, possession of marijuana, and possession of a controlled substance. Now, supposedly, Kelly should be considered a convicted felon, right? He pled guilty again to multiple felonies just last year. So I guess that might be the unlawful possession charge. I don't know if he was charged specifically with being a felon in possession. But again, he was allowed to bond out despite being on probation for these earlier previous crimes. So now the prosecutors in Columbia, South Carolina are asking a judge to keep him behind bars, to deny bond. Forest Acres Police Chief Don Robinson said Kelly's actions by presenting a firearm, shooting a firearm at a vehicle in a populated area is clearly what I believe to be a danger to society. He says, I strongly oppose bond form. With everything that we're hearing, we certainly believe that he should be a candidate for a bond denial. The mayor of Forest Acres, Thomas Andrews, said that Tyquan Kelly is a menace to the Midlands. Know that if you commit a crime like this in Forest Acres, we will deploy all of our resources and you will be caught. We pray that the criminal justice system will now do its part. And often, those prayers just simply aren't answered. Maybe the third time will be the charm, Tyquan Kelly and the criminal justice system. But so far, your criminal justice system is 0 for 2 in keeping a violent offender behind bars. On to today's armed citizen story. So I will caution that these are all preliminary reports. But KSDK in St. Louis, Missouri, with the headline, Father Shot Ex-Boyfriend in Self-Defense During Custody Exchange, Initial Findings Suggest. You know, and it can sometimes take months for law enforcement to make that official determination that, okay, yes, this was a justifiable homicide or this was a justifiable shooting. This was an act of self-defense. No charges should be filed. Well, and it might take a couple of months, I guess, for that official determination to be made in Lincoln County, Missouri. What is worth noting here is that the sheriff and the prosecuting attorney are both being very transparent about what the initial results of this investigation has revealed. So the defensive gun use, or what they believe, I think, is a defensive gun use, and you'll probably believe it too when you hear the evidence, happened around noon on Monday at a home in Ellsbury, Missouri. There was apparently a custody exchange. When officers arrived, they found a male adult suffering from an apparent gunshot wound who was pronounced deceased at the scene. They later identified him as 38-year-old Kevin Davis. Mike Wood, who is the Lincoln County prosecuting attorney, says the biological father was there at the residence to pick up his child from the biological mother. Mom was living with Kevin Davis, who was her new boyfriend. Wood says that an argument took place between the father and Davis, both of whom were armed, and the initial findings show that Davis allegedly attacked and strangled the father, which is when Davis was shot. On Facebook, the prosecuting attorney said that the preliminary autopsy findings corroborate statements of the shooter. Initial findings show that the shooter was attacked as he was sitting in his vehicle. The door had been opened. The shooting victim was on top of the shooter as he had been pushed backward into the vehicle. Wounds to the shooter, both documented at the time he was brought in for questioning and this morning, are showing consistency with defensive wounds. and support the statement that the shooter was being strangled. Further, Wood wrote, forensic analysis of blood in the vehicle as well as the trajectory of the bullets and analysis of the wounds tend to show that the victim was shot while he was inside the shooter's vehicle and on top of him. Additionally, the vehicle of the shooting victim had been used to block the vehicle of the shooter, and signs of urgency seem to have been present since the vehicle of the shooting victim had been left in drive as he ran towards the shooter. Now, Wood went on to say that all of this evidence at this point is leading investigators to believe that this was an act of lawful self-defense, but he told the KSTK, depending on how the investigation turns out, we'll then make a legal determination if the shooting was justified, but we're not able to make that determination at this time. So the investigation continues, but at this point, all the evidence points to this being an act of lawful self-defense. And again, I commend the prosecuting attorney for being so transparent with that information, because honestly, a lot of times we don't get that. We'll get a no comment. We can't release details until the investigation has been concluded. So good for the prosecuting attorney in Lincoln County, Mike Wood, for sharing this information with the public, because I think that is critically important. As for the incident itself, again, don't know what led up to that moment where apparently the boyfriend of the ex's decided to attack the biological father. Don't know why, but not justified, apparently. And a tragic incident. I mean, it really is. You know, at the heart of this, there's a kid who saw something, may very well have seen something terrible play out in front of him. And an adult who apparently could not keep his emotions in check and under control. Thankfully, again, there was an individual who was able to protect and defend himself, or who knows how this might have turned out. Again, a sad situation all around. But I suppose, again, it could have been much worse if the armed citizen was not able to protect and defend himself there in his vehicle. So we'll keep our eyes out for any more information there from Lincoln County, Missouri. But there it is, today's armed citizen story. Finally today, our good deed of the day. A good Samaritan in Mattoon, Illinois, who helped rescue a woman from her burning home. This was Tuesday morning, just after 7:30 in the morning. When firefighters arrived, they found a heavy fire and smoke coming from the back of the home. They were told at the scene that someone who was passing by had actually alerted the person living in the home, said, "Hey, your house is on fire," and was able to safely remove her from the house. Both the person living in the home and that passerby were treated on the scene for smoke inhalation, but they were not taken to the local hospital, so apparently their injuries were very, very minor. The home, unfortunately, deemed uninhabitable after the blaze. The Red Cross is assisting the homeowner, I guess, but the Mattoon Fire Department wanted to publicly thank the Good Samaritan for stopping and assisting the occupant there in that home. Again, the loss of property is terrible enough, but thankfully there was no loss of life, again, because of this individual in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. I'm not sure who our guest will be, or we may even be guestless. I'm not sure, but I will be here, and I'm looking forward to seeing you as well. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, whether it's legislation, litigation, regulation, armed citizen stories. We've got a defensive gun use from Philadelphia, where an attempted carjacking was stopped by an armed citizen. That was the first story that actually I wrote up today. So you can check that out at BearingArms.com. We got you covered when it comes to your 2A news and views. And again, looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, be free.